versus the wicked, and the collision of Imam Hussein, the head of the virtue, versus Yazid, the head of impiety. Karbala was about standing in the face of oppression, regardless of the cost. In Karbala, Imam Hussein, the second grandson of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, sacrificed all he had for one goal. This goal was to let the truth triumph over falsehood eventually, and he did that brilliantly. Salam and warm greetings to you, Abbas Taghi Mehdi from Pakistan. And please accept our appreciations to you for sending us such a great email. And please accept our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein and his loyal companions. And thank you for describing, the tragic and the mourning month of Muharram in such a great way, as you said. The goal of Imam Hussein and his loyal companions was to let the truth triumph over falsehood eventually. And Imam Hussein and his companions did that very brilliantly. And as you may know, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, belongs to all freedom-seeking people around the world. Abbas Taghi Mehdi from Pakistan, please accept our EQSL card as a confirmation. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And Abed Hossein Sajid from Pakistan, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a message. He says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. After a long time, I listened to your program on the occasion of martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. You presented great information in your special programs. Please send me an EQSL card. I shall wait for it." Salam and warm greetings to you, Abed Hossein Sajid from Pakistan. And thank you very much for letting us know which program or programs you like the best. As you said, IRIB English Radio presented great information in the special programs on Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and that's great. Yes, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Abed Hossein Sajid, please accept our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and his loyal companions. And after a short break, I will be back with an email from Russia from Vasily Kuznetsov. Welcome back. Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. He says, "Dear friends, I was glad to listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting on shortwave. I had a very good reception in English and Russian programs of IRIB in Moscow, where I live. Also, I should say that your website in English and Russian languages are very informative. Like many amateurs of radio, I submit my report with the hope to get a QSL card. Thank you in advance." Salam and warm greetings to you, Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia. And thank you for letting us know your views about IRIB English radio programs as well as IRIB English radio websites. As you said, you enjoy the news and the programs. Thank you for letting us know about it. As for your request about sending you a paper QSL card, as I have said many times, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio at the time of pandemic is not possible. So for the time being, please accept our electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia, write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And as the time tells me, we have to wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Before, ending this program, again, I do express my heartfelt condolences to all our listeners on the poignant occasion of Tasua, or the 9th of the mourning month of Muharram, the day preceding the history's most heartrending tragedy. Thank you very much for being with us. Have a good time and goodbye. Thank you.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. قال ألم نربك فينا وليدا ولبثت فينا من عمرك سنين
Pharaoh said, Did we not raise you among us as a child, and you remained among us for years of your life?
وفعلت فعلتك التي فعلت وأنت من الكافرين
And then you did your deed which you did, and you were of the ungrateful.
قال فعلتها إذا وأنا من الضالين
Moses said, I did it then, while I was of those astray.
فَفَرَرْتُ مِنْكُمْ لَمَّا خِفْتُكُمْ فَوَهَبَ لِي رَبِّي حُكْمًا وَجَعَلَنِي مِنَ الْمُرْسَلِينَ
So I fled from you when I feared you. Then my Lord granted me wisdom and prophethood and appointed me as one of the messengers.
وَتِلْكَ نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيَّ أَنْ عَبَّدْتَ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ
And is this a favor of which you remind me, that you have enslaved the children of Israel?
The 22nd verse of this chapter says, وَتِلْكَ نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيَّ أَنْ عَبَّدْتَ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ And is it a favor with which you reproach me that you have enslaved the children of Israel? Here is the continuation of what Prophet Moses was answering Pharaoh. First, in the 20th verse, he started saying, فَعَلْتُهَا إِذَنْ وَأَنَا مِنَ الضَّالِّينَ I was, as you thought, in error. فَفَرَرْتُ مِنْكُمْ لَمَّا خِفْتُكُمْ So I fled from you when I feared you. فَوَهَبَ لِي رَبِّي حُكْمًا وَجَعَلَنِي مِنَ الْمُرْسَلِينَ And because of that, my Lord granted me wisdom and made me one of the messengers. And وَتِلْكَ نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيْهِ Here, Prophet Moses is trying to answer the claim of Pharaoh when he said, أَلَمْ نُرَبِّكَ فِينَا وَلِيدًا وَلَبِثْتَ فِينَا مِنْ عُمُرِكَ سِنِينَ The 18th verse, as I may remember, that Pharaoh said, Did we not cherish you as a child among us, and you tarried among us for many years of your life? Here, Moses is answering with harshness and severity the reproaches and arrogances of Pharaoh, to answer back the reproach of Pharaoh about rearing Moses in his childhood. Moses protests and decisively says, وَتِلْكَ نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيْهِ أَنْ عَبَّدْتَ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ Is it a favor with which you reproach me, that you have enslaved the children of Israel? Of course, it is correct that the hand of events brought Moses to palace of Pharaoh, and he, عَلَى نَبِيْنَا وَآلِهِ وَعَلَيْهِمَ السَّلَامُ was unwillingly brought up in this place, and this shows that the might of Allah is there forever. But one must see that the main factor of this affair is something else. I mean, why was not Moses brought up in his real home with his father and mother carrying him? Of course, the answer is clear. Pharaoh held the children of Israel captive. He killed many boys and let girls to live for being slave girls. And this great oppression that Pharaoh committed caused Moses' mother to put her son in a wooden box and placing it in Nile River in order to protect her child. It was Allah's will that this small ship came near Pharaoh's palace. And it was Pharaoh's great oppression that made Moses indebted to this reproach and deprived him of his clean parental home and placed him in Pharaoh's defiled palace. With this commentary, the relation of Moses with Pharaoh's question gets clear. And this is, as you saw, a very decisive answer. قَالَ أَلَمْ نُرَبِّكَ فِينَا وَلِيدًا وَلَبِثْتَ فِينَا مِنْ عُمُرِكَ سِنِينَ The Pharaoh says, We cherished you as a child. You tarried among us for many years. But here is the answer. تِلْكَ نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيْهِ أَنْ عَبَّدْتَ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ You enslaved many children of Israel. And this is a kind of favor that you think you can reproach me with? The reproaches and arrogance should be answered with harshness and complete severity.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this series of programs, We will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Now, with the answer of Moses, we can move on to talk about another aspect. Another possible commentary is about this verse, that the purpose of Moses was that his rearing by Pharaoh could be as a blessing compared with those tyranny and cruelties Pharaoh's imposed upon the children of Israel. And it is understood that this blessing is a drop in the ocean. What blessing is it that Pharaoh points to while he has done many oppressions, many crimes beside it? I mean, the other possible meaning is that Moses is trying to say that, of course, this is a blessing. نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيْهِ. But at the same time, you enslaved many children of Israel, so this ni'mah is not a real one. This cannot be counted as a blessing. There are some other points regarding this verse, dear listeners, that we will, God willing, discuss. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليك يا سار الله
sky. Creation is in shock as you prepare to die. Everything you gave you gave without complaint. You died a tragic death, but you did not die in vain. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners, because, as you know, this is the day of Tasu'a, the 9th of Muharram. It is a very sad and very solemn day in the Islamic calendar, the eve of the Day of Ashura, the day when Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his loyal companions and many of his kin and family were brutally murdered on the plains of Karbala. And it is a day which renders the heart to pieces, the hearts of all of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, as well as the freedom-loving and freedom-seeking individuals of this world. And for this reason, we would like to once again offer our condolences to all of you. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a very important question. And that question is this. As you know, Imam Hussein was preceded by his brother, Imam Hassan, who was the Imam prior to him. And we see that apparently there was a difference in the conduct between these two Imams. One of the Imams, he made peace with his political opponent, Muawiyah, whereas Imam Hussein, he did not, and his actions of both parties led to ultimately to the Battle of Karbala and the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. So the question you want to ask is this: what was fundamentally the reason in this difference in the conduct of these two individuals? Why did this occur? So the most important answer and the most significant answer that we can give to this question is this, is that in general terms, the conditions, the political conditions of the two imams, alayhim as-salam, was distinct and different. To be more specific, their opponents were different. The opponent of Imam Hassan, alayhi as-salam, Muawiyah, he was different and distinct in his conduct from Yazid, the opponent of Imam Hussein. How so? The main reason was this, that Muawiyah, as history tells us, he tried his utmost to at least apparently show people that he was preserving the very basic Islamic, virtues and laws. He apparently, even though behind the scenes he might have, been doing every kind of transgression and committing every kind of sin imaginable, but at least he never openly and apparently showed that he was doing this, and he tried to put on the facade of, goodness to him. However, this was not the same with Yazid. He openly committed transgressions, very basic transgressions, which are contrary to some of the very basic laws and virtues of Islam. He openly drank wine and intoxicants, and he openly and very adamantly committed homicide and killed
and very openly denied revelation, right? You know, there's a very famous poem which has been ascribed to him, in which he very openly and categorically denies the possibility of, you know, wahi or revelation and the prophethood of the prophet, right? So these kind of open transgressions, you know, led the imam to, you know, very openly, it led to a, you know, very similar reaction, in the sense that the imam openly opposed him. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the reasons for the uprising of Imam Hussein in contrast to his brother Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Yemeni men, ominous shadows.
Part 2.
The war in Yemen was in fact a combination of three battles. Everyone knows about the first war, the resistance by the Ansarullah against the Saudi invasion and the forces supported by Mohammed bin Salman. The second war is a conflict between the Houthis and the Al-Qaeda militants, who are supported by Riyadh to make Yemen insecure and crush the Houthis, who are Zaydi Shias. But we've heard less often about Yemen's third war. On April 27, 2017, Abu Rabu Mansur Hadi, Mohammed bin Salman's crony, who claims to be Yemen's president, deposed Idarus Qasim Abdul Aziz Al Zubaydi, the governor of Aden, the capital of former South Yemen. The reason for his dismissal was the vast relationship between Zubaydi and a tiny nation on the southern shores of the Persian Gulf. The newly established United Arab Emirates. After the dismissal, a large crowd of Zubaydi supporters took to the streets. The supporters were mobilized by the UAE. Hadi was informed through Saudi agents that the United Arab Emirates was behind all of this. It wasn't the first time that Hadi and bin Salman were informed of the UAE's spontaneous measures. Last winter, Hadi, who usually resided in Saudi Arabia, decided to visit Aden, that was the largest city controlled by the Saudi-backed militants. When Hadi's plane approached the airport in Yemen, as a rule of thumb, it requested to land, but the airport in Yemen didn't allow the plane to land. So the plane had to land kilometers away on the island of Socotra. Hadi was enraged. He fired the director of the airport and ordered the forces under his command to besiege the airport. The The UAE-backed forces opened fire at Hadi's forces at the airport. So, the rift that everyone was already aware of opened wider. The rift between the UAE and Saudi Arabia,
بين الإمارات والسعودية.
Bin Salman had sensed the danger and initially decided to act as the big brother and impartial mediator to forge reconciliation between Hadi and Abu Dhabi Crown Prince, who's also the UAE's deputy commander-in-chief, Bin Zayed. 2 weeks later, Hadi left for Abu Dhabi, but talks took only 10 minutes. Bin Zayed reminded Hadi that the UAE has paid a lot of money to liberate Yemen. And Hadi told Bin Zayed that the UAE acts like an occupying power in Yemen, not a country that's deployed forces to liberate it. Hadi decided to fire the UAE cronies in his government, which itself was designated by Saudi Arabia. Bin Salman was supposed to teach the UAE a lesson and force them to support Saudi policies and stop going their own way. Finally, on April 27, 2017, Bin Salman gave Hadi the green light to punish the UAE. Adarus Qasim al-Zubaydi, the governor of Aden, and Hani Ali bin Breik, one of the ministers of Hadi's cabinet, were fired. The UAE reacted quickly. A massive protest in Aden. This time, the groups in Aden sought independence in South Yemen. For decades, Yemen had been divided into two northern and southern parts. North Yemen, whose capital was Sana'a, gained independence from the Ottoman Empire in the last year of the First World War in 1918. But South Yemen remained under British control for several decades later. Aden, the capital of South Yemen, was an important port for UK colonial ships in West and South Asia for decades. 1969, South Yemen became independent. 21 years later, in 1990, South Yemen became united with North Yemen. 30 years later, the unity was about to collapse due to the UAE's meddlesome policies. After the war in Yemen, Hadi forces backed by the UAE and Saudi Arabia managed to occupy parts of what was called South Yemen in the past. North Yemen was still in control of Ansarullah forces, so South Yemen had turned into the only shelter for the Saudi-backed rebels. In January 2018, Zubaydi announced that the process of deposing Hadi in Aden had started. Now, a new front has opened for MBS. On January 28th, all administrative buildings of Hadi's government in Aden were captured. The SDC controlled the city. The spring in 2018 started while the Emiratis made another new move. The beginning of the threat to the Western interests in Bab al-Mandab Strait. After China came to the region, everyone got worried. Now, the Persian Gulf Arab states consider control over the strait a major part of security in their region. Soon, Turks, Japanese, and Americans showed up for trade and gaining a foothold on the African side of the strait. The carnage of people in Yemen famine, disease, hunger, and ruining all welfare indices were the costs that the Yemenis had to pay so the UAE could progress. With former U.S. President Donald Trump's mediation, on August 13, 2020, the UAE signed the normalization deal with the occupying regime of Israel. The STC immediately reacted. Ben Brake, who was the commander of the STC forces, much before the agreement, had announced in winter of 2018 that he would support any reconciliation agreement with the Zionist regime. If the UAE had put its own interests as well as the occupying regime's interests in the same basket, it can continue to enjoy the U.S. support and Bin Salman wouldn't dare to interfere. A large part of Yemen's coastal territories, from Aden to the Red Sea, is occupied by the UAE and UAE-backed forces. The UAE is not that interested in the depth of the Yemeni territory. The goal is merely to control the sea. But why? On the southern coast, China has a naval base in Djibouti. The proximity of the UAE and the Israeli regime preserves U.S. interests against China's expansionist policies in Bab el-Mandab Strait. The U.S. cannot deploy forces in every region on its own. Huge military costs have already triggered protests inside the United States. That's why the U.S. put the heavy burden of the uprising in Yemen on the Saudis' shoulders. Bin Salman purchased U.S. weapons to crack down on the uprising. The U.S. was in fact killing two birds with one stone. Trump has said time and again, if Arabs want the U.S. to help them militarily, they have to pay for it. But Saudi Arabia isn't a long-term investment for the U.S. The title of the custodian of the two holy mosques bars the Saudi rulers from openly revealing their ties with Israel. What's more, Saudi Arabia is too large. The ideal situation for the U.S. and Israel in West Asia is to divide the countries into smaller nations the size of the UAE. The Israeli regime can't directly interfere in Yemen. It needed a middleman because of the small size of Israel, its limited military capabilities, and the hatred of Muslims against the occupiers of Al-Quds. The middleman should have been as reliable as Saudi Arabia, and at the time, it should have been so small and fragile that it won't pose any threat to Israel in the future. There is a policy in the U.S. that's officially called QME, or the so-called Qualitative Military Edge of Israel. Based on the policy declared by the U.S., which has been accepted by all U.S. administrations, Israel should have the highest military power in the Middle East. That's why Israel was against the sale of super-advanced F-32 fighter jets to the UAE, even during the time Abu Dhabi was normalizing ties with Israel. Israel's opposition to the UAE's possession of such weapons proves the point Iran has mentioned for years. Israel doesn't have a problem just with Iran. Israel has a problem with every Muslim nation in the region that has military edge and the capability to respond. Israel even has a problem with countries that have extended hands of friendship to it. For sure, Israel's desirable condition for the region is to see it divided into many pieces. Turkey, Saudi Arabia, or the UAE, it doesn't make any difference. Bigger nations are definitely top on the agenda, a reality people like Bin Salman will find out too late, when the Saudis can't do anything about it anymore. In the middle of all this, Yemenis fall victim to preserving Israel's alleged edge in the region, so Bab al-Mandab will be a safe route for the West to transit goods and energy, a world that's aging and is aware that it's going to perish soon. The tiny nation of the UAE was allowed to play the role of Washington's advisor and agent in the region. An example that the U.S. used the UAE as a tool can be seen in this case. The launch of the Amal or Hope Mars rover that belonged to the United Arab Emirates. It belonged to the UAE because the UAE had paid for it, but the technology doesn't have anything to do with the UAE. And it's obvious why. The UAE needs to have missile industry to launch the satellite. It needs to have ballistic missile technology. The U.S. hasn't allowed any of its allied countries to have missile technology. So, the UAE doesn't have the right to have missiles. Why? Again, the answer is hidden within QME. Preserving Israel's so-called qualitative military edge in the region. Yet, the UAE is useful for Israel and the West as an infantry in crisis-stricken Yemen. The UAE spends money so the Yemeni coasts will be controlled by forces it backs and sets a firm foothold for Israel's spy agencies in the strategic Bab al-Mandab region. Israel does the work under the name of the UAE. Milking a cow is an idiom in English, meaning taking advantage of other people's resources to achieve your own goals. These days, the West has found a new way to communicate with third world countries. Let them spend, but for us. The UAE has nothing to do with Mars. It is too small to be preoccupied with such missions, and it doesn't have the necessary human resources. The UAE has the same situation in Yemen. Until December 2019, the Yemen war had cost $29 billion. It was a huge burden mainly on the shoulders of Riyadh and Abu Dhabi. The UAE doesn't have military forces either, so it had to make military service for men under 30 years of age mandatory. In 2015, 45 of UAE soldiers were killed in Ma'arib in an attack by the Houthis. These are the new costs the Emiratis weren't aware of. The humanitarian costs in the Emirati society are higher. The society has never experienced democracy and doesn't consider the government an elected body. What the society witnesses are the decisions by hereditary rulers and the bodies of the sons who go back home in body bags. The trade towers in the UAE are in an even more fragile situation. They're almost defenseless in the face of Houthi attacks. The slightest strike on the UAE will take the international economic spotlight away from the tiny nation. The UAE takes all the risks while the US doesn't even spend a dollar, and doesn't lose even a single soldier, or in other words, the U.S. is milking the cow. On February 9th, 2020, the UAE military forces withdrew from Yemen, but it didn't mean that the UAE's presence in Yemen was over. 90,000 militia forces in Yemen are fighting for the UAE and with the UAE's funds. What's more, the UAE has left a heritage in Yemen, the STC, or the Southern Transitional Council. It's the UAE's proxy force that seeks Yemen's disintegration and an independent South Yemen with Aden as its capital. The UAE withdrew from the military conflict in Yemen and left Saudi Arabia to its own devices. At the same time, Sudan, that's under the influence of UAE petrodollars, downsized its forces from 15,000 down to 650. Now, the UAE has established a firm foothold in the region. It abandoned Saudi Arabia, so it pays the financial and humanitarian costs of the conflict on its own. But the UAE's proxy forces will benefit from the war. They had put Saudi-backed Hadi's rule at risk. The UAE's desirable outcome was providing a secure path for trade with the West and the Zionist regime. Both coasts are controlled by the Israeli regime, either here in Aqaba or here in the Mediterranean. They need this strait to be connected to Asia. The UAE and its proxy forces have controlled one side of the strait. The conflict followed an economic siege on Yemen. While the Emirati sheikhs construct fancy high-rises, Yemeni children go without food and medicine and have ended up in this situation. Many of them die of extreme hunger. But as long as Bab al-Mandab has trade values for the West, the deaths of thousands or even millions of Yemenis isn't considered a serious problem for those who wield power and wealth, and it's the media's job to shed crocodile tears. No one will remember thousands upon thousands of men, women, and children who've lost their lives in Yemen. The last popular force in Yemen, the Ansarullah, is the only bastion that's standing up against arrogant powers in the world, but it's an unequal war. The economic siege of Yemen is a silent massacre that's supposed to win the war for the West. These days, Saudi Arabia is the big loser of the war. After 3,000 deaths, heavy damage to the oil industry, and billions of dollars paid for the war, without any hope to win, launching more airstrikes and killing more Yemeni children are the only things that Saudi pilots can do perfectly well. But the UAE has so far ditched Saudi Arabia very well. Even though it paid part of the billions-dollar bill of the war, in 2019, it pulled out of the war and left Riyadh alone. ...108 Emirati soldiers have been killed. It is a major and unprecedented blow in the history of the UAE, but compared to the Saudi loss, it isn't so much. It's also received the best chunk of the cake. The ports and the trade chokeholds like Aden Port, Bab al-Mandab, and Socotra Island, namely everything that was once controlled by the British colonial power. The UAE betrayed Saudi Arabia, But with the U.S. support and the promise of reconciliation with Israel, the sheikhs in Abu Dhabi have to always watch out. It isn't clear when the U.S. and Israel will betray the Emirati sheikhs. In this game, everyone is ready to blow the right strike at the right time. The UAE already knows that it's shorter than the other players, so it will have to fight tooth and nail for its own survival. The story will continue.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now let's listen to the speech of Sheikh Jafar Jafar.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We then send our condolences to our 12th and living Imam Al-Hujjah Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif and to each and every one of you as we gather on this evening and on these nights to commemorate the tragedy that befell upon the household of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wa Alihi Wasallam. You know, tonight we cry for Abbas. And Abbas was not a man just of bravery. Abbas was a man of high faith. You know, Imam As-Sadiq says, "Kana ammun al-Abbas nafidh al-basira wa salb al-iman." He says, "My uncle Abbas was a man of penetrating insight and unwavering faith." And how could he not be? Because Abbas grew up in the house of Ali. Abbas grew up under the imamate of Hassan. Imam grew up under the imamate of Hussein. This man was the perfect example of what a mu'min is. And so today as we praise Abbas, it is necessary that we praise his mother, Ummul Baneen, as well. We say salam to you, Ya Ummul Baneen, for raising four children in such a way in which you raise them to sacrifice their lives for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, my brothers and sisters, Abbas represented so much in Karbala. Abbas was a brother. Abbas was a father. Abbas was a son. Abbas was the courageous one. Abbas was loyal. Abbas was steadfast. But you know, more than anything for me, Abbas represented hope in Karbala. Hope. For as long as Abbas was alive, the children hoped that water would come because they said, "Chacha Abbas is there. My uncle Abbas is there." As long as Abbas was alive, the women felt like their hijabs would remain. Why? Because Abbas was there. And as long as Abbas was alive, Imam al-Hussein felt like his entire army was there. Why? Because Abbas was there. This was Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, that on the night, on the day of Ashura, Abbas alayhi salam would gather his brothers together. And he would say to them, "Go forward, may I be ransomed for you. Go and defend the Imam of your time." They went and they sacrificed their lives. But there came a time on the day of Ashura when there was no one but Imam al-Hussein and Abu al-Fadl Abbas at this point. Abbas comes to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Imam knows why Abbas is coming. Abbas comes to the Imam alayhi salam and he says, please Mawla, allow me to go. At this time the narration say, Fabaka Hussein Buka and Shadida. Hussein began to cry profusely because of what Abbas was asking. My brothers and sisters, today when you cry for Abbas, do not cry silently. Cry with your voices today. Because Hussein cried loudly for Abbas in Karbala. Wa Husayna, it is said Abbas comes to Imam al-Hussein. Imam begins to cry and he says, Ya Akhi, Anta Sahibu Liwa'i. He says, Abbas, how can I let you go? You are the standard bearer of my army, Abbas. How can I let you go? I wonder if Abbas said, Mawla, besides you and I, what armies? Oh, Abbas, Abbas says to Imam al-Hussein, my heart has become restricted now. The pain is overburdening, Mawla, allow me to go. The cries of Al-Atash were present from the children. Imam looks at them and says, Abbas, if you want to do something, then go and get water for the children. Abbas, alayhi salam, listens to the command of his Mawla. But this is where, my brothers and sisters, we have to talk about the farewell between Zainab and Abbas. This was Zainab who used to rock the cradle of Abu al-Fadl. And now his Abbas is coming to bid farewell. You know, Zainab has seen that from the morning, anytime someone leaves, they do not come back. Zainab knows that when Abbas is leaving, Abbas is not coming back. Abbas alayhi salam must have bid farewell to Hussein alayhi salam at this time as well. It is said Abbas alayhi salam began to ride his horse towards the Furat. The enemies began to surround Abbas from all sides. But Abbas was able to break through all of them until Abbas entered the Furat. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, it is said, comes off of his horse. He cups a cup full of water. He looks at this water and then throws it back down. And it is said, he recites, Ya nafsum min ba'dil Hussein huni, wa ba'dahu la kunti antakuni, adal Hussein waridul manuni, wa tashrabin al barid al ma'i. He says, oh nafs, oh soul, you are of little worth after Hussein. It does not benefit you to live after him. This is Hussein who is surrounded by death while you want to drink water. Abbas throws that water back. Abbas fills up the watering skin. Abbas has one intention now. Abbas's intention is what? To bring this water to the children. To fulfill the promise that Mawla had given him. Abbas begins to ride his horse. Anyone that comes in front of Abbas, Abbas is able to put him aside. My brothers and sisters, no one could fight Abbas from the front. This is where a mal'oon, a coward by the name of Zayd bin Warqa, was hiding behind a tree. And when Abbas passes him, he comes from behind and strikes the right hand of Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas. Wa Abbas, Abbas alayhi salam was able to switch the mushk onto his left hand. And he says, by God, even if you cut my right arm, I will defend my religion. Abbas continues to ride. Again, the enemies come and surround him. Abbas is able to push through until another coward by the name of Hakim bin Tufail, hiding behind another tree, comes and strikes the left hand of Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas. Wa Abbas, Abbas, it is said in narrations, was able to grab the musk and place it in his teeth.